the living stone, rejected by men, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also are like living stones being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For in Scripture it says, "See, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Now to you who believe, this stone is precious, but to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the capstone, and a stone that causes men to stumble, and a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they were destined for. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." We end there giving thanks to God for his word to us and how he speaks to us today. I have one more story to read out. Keith can't be here tonight. You're going to hear why in a minute, but he has typed up his story and sent it through to let you know of his experience of being on the Alpha course. Keith says, "I'm sorry that I cannot be at the Alpha celebration to tell my own story, but right now I will be swimming with my two grandchildren in sunny Spain. When I was 9 years old, I made a decision to give my life to Jesus. At that time, I was a regular at Sunday school and went to church every Sunday night with my dad. At 15, I left school and entered the world of work with all its influences, and the feelings of God that I had subsided. Nevertheless, I continued to attend church many times, and I really wanted to take communion, but I couldn't. The minister of the church used to say, 'It doesn't matter how much you do about church if you are not a Christian,' and I thought that was me. I retired from work at 62 after 25 years of employment in the city hospital, where I witnessed a lot of suffering. But I found it hard to cope without the routine, and after a lifetime of work, I was just empty. I became depressed and started to drink heavily. My family became really concerned about me. On a number of occasions, they found me unconscious, and when I was hospitalized for the third time, having passed out in my shed, they realized that I was lucky to be alive. It was my daughter, Allison, who persuaded me to come on the Alpha course. The first night was strange, but in a good way. The leaders and helpers in my group made me feel completely at ease, and I felt free to share my thoughts on the talks, which I really enjoyed. I never missed a night on the course, and gradually I began to feel the presence of God again. The weekend was a particularly significant time for me. By that point, I'd already asked the Lord back into my life while reading and praying at the water's edge in Hazelbank. But on the weekend, I experienced the presence of the Holy Spirit in a new way, and for the first time in my life, I took communion. It was very special. Catherine was telling me, his daughter Catherine was telling me that they'd been praying for him for years, and that her and her husband Tim had prayed in I-56 just last year, specifically asking that her dad would come back to know the Lord. This is the end of his story. "I am now a changed man. Anyone who knows me, and especially my family, will tell you that. I have much better control over my temper and my feelings than ever before. My anxiety levels have dropped drastically, and I've been able to reduce my medication for depression, and I'm being weaned off it completely. I no longer take sleeping tablets, much to my doctor's amazement, because I have peace of mind and I sleep through the night. I have a strong sense that God is healing things from my past that I had buried deep down in my life, and I am so grateful. The Alpha course has taught me so much. I've learned how to pray, and I've learned that there actually is a real devil. He does chase you when you trust in Jesus. I've also learned the importance of attending a lively church, and Karn Money has been so good for me. I wouldn't change what the Alpha course has given me for £1 million. That's Keith's story. It's incredible. Yeah, why not? Absolutely. So encouraging. So encouraging. When I was a teenager, I wore braces. How embarrassing. Not the ones that you had on your body, but the ones that you had on your teeth. And before I got the actual train track braces, I had one of those plates that you wear in preparation for getting that brace on. And I knew it was an expensive thing, and I had to wear it basically all the time, but it was so painful that I took it out on occasion. And once at a golf course in Kilnahirk, I took the plate out and put it in my pocket around hole two or three, something like that, and by hole eight or nine, I put my hand in my pocket and the brace was not there. And I thought, my parents are going to kill me. I better, you know, find alternative accommodation for this evening because I'm going to be dead. We spent the rest of our time golfing and continued round to play a few more holes. And at the end of our day, just as I was heading off the golf course, this older man came across to me and my group of friends and said, "Have any of you guys lost anything?" And I thought, no way. He hasn't picked up my saliva-covered retainer brace. And so like I was even I had the embarrassment of saying, "Well, I lost a brace." And he said, "Yeah, there you go." And I'm like, no way. A kind golfer. I thought that was an oxymoron, but there you go. He picked it up, and I think it was he was probably able to identify who owned the brace fairly easily. There weren't that many other teenagers on the course that day. He wasn't walking up to the older gentleman on the course saying, "You know, is this yours? Is this yours?" He could identify pretty quickly who it belonged to, who owned it. It was going to be one of us spotty teenagers on the golf course who owned the brace. And in this passage, Peter writes to the church and says, "You are people who belong to God, a people belonging to God." God says of the church, "You're mine. You're mine." That's what God is saying to the group of believers that Peter is writing to. "You're mine." You see, this church was under pressure. These people were rejected in the world. These people were made fun of. And they felt ridiculous. They were rejected. But in this passage, we discover they're chosen by God. They're a bunch of chosen rejects. They're rejected by the world, but chosen by God. Who would you want to be chosen by? The world or by God? God's grip on you is firm. He won't let you go. And the world changes its mind like the weather. And so God chooses his people to be his own, to belong to him. And Peter writes to remind them of that truth. If you were to come to my house, I could show you some paintings that have been done by my three-year-old son, Robbie. Robbie's at nursery school, and he likes to paint, and you could see trees and houses and cars and footballers and the things that he likes to paint when he's at nursery school. And I'm pretty sure that the other paintings in our house that have been done by James, mainly, who's his older brother, age five, you know, they would be distinctive. You'd be able to see which ones are done by James and which ones are done by Robbie. I hope you wouldn't be attributing either of their work to me, right? Possibly, actually, my artistic abilities are very, very limited. But you would be able to, if you looked at the painting and you knew the members of my household, Rose is only 6 months old. She's not doing any painting right now, doing lots of crayon during the night and that kind of thing, but no painting. You would be able to trace from the creation who the creator is. You'd be able to work it back. You say, this is the work of Robbie. He's 3 years old, he's nursery level. That kind of looks like a painting that someone in nursery school would do. You'd be able to work out who is the one who has made it. And Peter is writing to the church to say, God has brought you about. You can trace the work of God in the church. It's evident that God has been at work in your lives. God has done this. The Creator is evident in his creation. It's his handiwork that's brought about the church. Once they were a bunch of nobodies, but now they are somebodies. They were not a people, but now they are the people of God. God writes to the church and says, "You're mine. You belong to me. It's my handiwork that's brought you about." The Creator is evident in his creation, the church. At one stage, your life was directionless. At one stage, your life had no meaning or purpose. You were just going round and round on the treadmill or like the baggage carousel at the airport, unclaimed, just circulating, going round and round and round. You know, the same old routine, the same old Groundhog Day. The alarm goes, you get up, you have your breakfast, you sit in traffic. You arrive in your office, you do your work, you get back in your car, you sit in traffic, you have your dinner, you watch meaningless television, you go to bed, and the alarm goes, and you do it all over again. And you think, what is the point in this? What is this for? Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. What is the purpose and point in my life? I'm on a treadmill. I have no direction or purpose. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. You belong. You've been claimed. And you're going somewhere. You have purpose in your life because you know where you've come from. You know whose you are. And you know where you are going now that you are the church, now that you belong to Him. You have an awareness of your origin. You know that you were brought into existence by God. You know that you are going to God, that one day you will be with Him forever. And for now, you live to glorify Him. You got purpose in your life that you did not have before simply because you know who you belong to. You belong to God. One day you were circulating, just going round and round, without meaning or direction or purpose, unclaimed, until God chose you. In a world that rejected you, God chose you to belong to Him. In the Old Testament, there's a story about a prophet and his wife, a prostitute. Hosea, the prophet, marries Gomer, a prostitute. What is going on? You think the Bible's boring? You haven't read it? God instructs a prophet to marry a prostitute. What on earth? And as this story unfolds, they have children, and their children's names are terrible. You think you've got a terrible name, right? You hate the name your parents have called you. You laugh at the names that celebrities call their children. You think they're embarrassing. You ain't heard nothing until you hear the names of Hosea and Gomer's children. I saw a spoof article on the internet recently that said the name Gary was going out of fashion, right? Said there'd be no Garys left in Britain by 2050. It's not true, right? They just made it up and then everyone was freaking out. Gary's a wonderful name, right? I am so dead by anybody I know who's called Gary. But like, you know, there are some names, I'm not going to mention them because I will lose friends. There are some names that will just disappear, right? Won't they? There's some names that will not be around in 10 years' time. And you're thinking of them now. You can text them to me later, and I'll get John Dickinson to read them out. But some names are embarrassing. Some names you'd rather not have. You know, it's that time at the wedding ceremony when their middle name is read out and everyone sort of sniggers because it's your middle name that they don't associate with you, and you think, you have a ridiculous middle name, right? And you're embarrassed, but there's nothing in comparison to the names that we find in the story of Hosea and Gomer. They had a daughter and called her Lo Ruhamah, meaning not loved. They had a son and called him Lo Ami, meaning not mine. Unloved and not mine. Can you imagine? Every time the roll was called in school, every time you introduced yourself, what's your name? Every time you had to fill in a form, every time someone called you, every time someone greeted you, and you had to repeatedly introduce yourself as not belonging, as not loved, humiliating, embarrassing. And yet God works in the life of Hosea, the prophet. God works in the life of Gomer. God works in the life of this family unit. And it's incredible. Lo Ruhamah and Lo Ami get new names, totally new names, new identities. The word Lo is dropped. They become Ruhamah and Ami, meaning loved and mine, beloved and mine. You belong. The one who has received compassion. The one who belongs, the one who once did not belong now belongs, the one who had once not received compassion receives compassion. They get a new identity. When Jesus claims your life, you get a new identity. You belong. You're loved. That's what it means to enter the people of God, to enter the church, to become part of the body. You get a new name. You belong. You're mine, God says. And maybe over this Alpha course, you've been working out your own identity. You've been trying to figure out, whose am I? Who am I living to please? Whose opinion of my life matters most? Whose rejection would make my life meaningless? Who am I living to please? God's been awakening you to the fact that you could belong to him, that you belong to him, and that he will never let you go, that he loves you with a love that will never let you go, that his acceptance of you is eternal. He still chooses people who were not a people to belong to him today. He still chooses nobodies to be somebodies in the purposes of God. Our place in the family is granted. We are brought into the church. We're bought by Jesus. That's how we get access to the kingdom of God. That's how we belong to the church. God says, you're mine because of mercy. You're mine because of mercy. That's what we discover as we read this passage. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Let's be clear about this. The church is not a group of people who've got their act together. Your friends who have invited you along here tonight because they've done the Alpha Course and they want you to find out about what the Alpha Course is, they're inviting you here to meet other people who know the only person who ever lived who had his act together. Jesus Christ is the only one who had his act together. He is the only one who is without sin, and we are all in desperate need of him because we do not have our acts together. We're trusting in Jesus. We're his. We belong to God because of the mercy of God. We belong to him because he's been compassionate to us, because he's chosen us. That's why we love him so much. We love Jesus so much because we don't deserve a place in the church. We have no entitlement to be here. We have no right to this. And we're grateful for Jesus who has granted us access in the first place. It's his work. We are his creation. We're here because of him. It's not that we've improved ourselves and developed so much that we now are fit for the church. Not at all. God says, you're mine because of mercy. In 2012, there was an article in the Guardian newspaper, and they published an email that a retired naval officer called Nick Cruz sent to his grown-up son and two grown-up children. The letter is brutally honest. His grown-up son and two grown-up daughters. The letter's brutally honest. This dad is miserable, frustrated, and disappointed. And he writes to them to talk about how their lives have disappointed him so much. He speaks of their failed marriages, their poor career prospects, their limited finances, and his concern for his grandchildren's future. Here's the final paragraph of the email that his children received. I can now tell you that I, for one, and I sense your mum feels the same, have had enough of being forced to live through your never-ending bad dream of our children's underachievement and domestic ineptitudes. I want to hear no more from any of you until, if you feel inclined, you have a success or an achievement or a, capital letters, realistic plan for the support and happiness of your children to tell me about. I don't want to see your mother burdened anymore with your miserable woes. It's not as if any of the advice she strives to give you has ever been listened to with good grace, far less acted upon. So I ask you to spare her further unhappiness. If you think I've been unfair in what I've said, by all means, try to persuade me to change my mind. But you won't do it simply by whinging and saying you don't like it. You'll have to come up with some meaty reasons to demolish my points and build a case for yourself. If that isn't possible, or you simply can't be bothered, then I rest my case. I am bitterly, bitterly disappointed, Dad. Here's what I'd love to ask Mr. Cruz. Mr. Nick Cruz, the former naval officer. I'd love to ask him, did your email work? Did your email have the impact that you desired when you sent it? Do your kids love you more now as a result of reading what you've just written to them? Did they read word by word and did love stir in their heart? Did they grow in affection for you as a result of your demands upon them? And your pointing out of their failures, does it make them think, oh, I'm so glad I have a dad like that? Of course it doesn't. course it didn't. They might have tried to get their act together. They might have desired to prove a point. I'll show him. But they do it out of anger. They do it out of bitterness. They do it out of fear of continual disappointment. In the Bible, we discover a God who actually pursues rebels. A father who goes after wayward children. Who sees us in our weakness. Who sees us in our mess. Who sees us at our worst and calls to us to bring us out of darkness into his wonderful light. Who pursues us when we mess up. Who sees how far we've wandered from the life he longs for us to live and doesn't shout, "Hey, get your act together and get back on track." He comes to meet us, light of the world, step down into darkness. The one who loves us so much that he gave up heaven, was forsaken by his father, stepped down into earth, experienced the rejection of the people that were his own creation in order to love you, serve you, and save you as your substitute and rescuer at the cross. You're loved when you're at your worst. You know what a football match, when the team's losing, say like if you're a Linfield supporter and they're getting beaten again, And when like the goals are going in and you know like there's 10 minutes left, you think, I could get in the car and I could get away from here and I could hide my scarf and no one would even know that I'm a Linfield supporter. You get in the car and you drive away from the game and you see the fans exiting the stadium and the opposition fans are singing, "Where is your support?" And, you know, "Cheerio, cheerio, cheerio," because nobody wants to be associated with a loser. We head for the gates when the team's losing. If the team wins, we hang around and stay all night. When Northern Ireland beat England 1-0 10 years ago, couldn't get them out of Windsor Park because you want to be associated with winners and you spin your scarf and you sing the songs and you're part of the victory. But when the team's losing, you hide your scarf and you get out of there because it's horrible to be associated with a loser. Here's the message of the gospel. God gravitates towards us when we lose, when we're wayward, when we're not living the kind of life that he intends us to live. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's the good news that we find in the pages of our Bibles. That's what this church celebrates. That's why we worship Jesus. No one else is like him. He comes towards us when we're at our worst and when we're at our weakest. And so when we sing in worship here, we regularly sing "Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound That Saved a Wretch Like Me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see." God says, "You're mine. You're mine because of mercy. You belong. You're mine because of my mercy. You're the work of my hands, not your hands." You don't need to clean your act up to come back to God. You don't need to unearth meaty reasons for him to love you. The reason that he loves you is his heart of love, not your heart. It's what's going on in his heart that generates love for you, not what's going on in your heart. And so you simply need to appeal to his mercy tonight to say, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner." That's all you need to do to become a Christian. And as a church, we trust in the perfect life of Jesus Christ in our place for our sins. We're a group of people who regularly sing, "My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness." We're not here tonight because of our own blood, sweat, and tears. We're here because of Jesus' blood, sweat, and tears for us. God says to you, "You're mine because of mercy." As we finish up tonight, I just want to remind you again of these words that Peter writes to the church to say, "You belong." He says, "Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." We worship and serve a merciful God who walks towards us at our weakest, who comes to enable us to belong when we have no right to belong in and of ourselves. He grants us access to the church and says, "You're welcome. You're welcome because of my son. I want you to be a part of me. I want you to know me and the love that I have for you. In a moment, I'm going to ask the band to come and sing and lead us in song, because I think the best response for all of us as we hear of God's love and to hear the good news of the gospel is to worship, to demonstrate our gratitude to Jesus for all that he's done in our lives. And we worship tonight because, yeah, Jesus is incredible, and we simply trust him in all that he has done. We worship because we've heard stories of other people who've experienced that love in a variety of situations and circumstances. And so I want you to join with them as we sing, and then I'll come again and tell you how, a specific way I could invite you to respond. But why don't we stand together just now, and the band will lead us in worship.